We are now officially recording.
We are?
Right.
You missed all the good stuff. What's the point now?
No, I don't think we should share certain things. But, well, maybe. I don't know. Depends. No. I've shared some personal stuff, so.
Yeah, me too. Probably a little too much, honestly. Sometimes when I leave here, I won't even listen to it back. I'm like, oh, you're so cringe.
Do you feel embarrassed? Yeah. Cringe?
Cringe. Have you ever, but I'm that type of person, if I've ever heard my voice.
Yeah.
Or see myself on video, I will not watch it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like Daniel when he was a baby and I'm looking at myself holding him.
Uh-huh.
Nightmare. Right. I'm like, honey, when I die, just do photos of everyone but me.
You ever listen to Jim Gaffigan?
No.
He's a comedian. And he does fat jokes. And he's like watching TV and you're like, look at that fat hippo guy. Oh, wait a minute, it's me. That's me. No.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, I have like secondhand embarrassment even after I come off. I'm like, what did you talk about? It like goes through your head and then like forget it. It never happened. Never going to listen to it again. Who cares?
Well, people like you. Some of the folks we've talked to were like, who's that lady on the podcast?
Yeah.
I'm like, she's a sister at church. No, who is she? She's a sister at church. What else do you need to know?
Who is it?
What's, you want to know the address or something so you can send flowers or something?
Yeah, weird. Really.
Cringe.
A little envelope with some powder in there. No, I'm just kidding.
Right. Would you like some anthrax today?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've offended every feminist out there by now.
Hey, me too.
But that was not the intention, you know. So, I don't know.
You're right. I don't know. We were talking about, I was talking about a book that I was listening to. Mm-hmm. A little while ago about the brain that changes itself. I got two really cool books. One is The Brain That Changes Itself, which this guy talks about how malleable your brain is and how it can adapt to different ailments and stuff. And wow. One of the examples was like how these people who had lost, you know, the function in their ear to balance. And they're always experiencing vertigo and everything.
Right, yeah.
That they had developed a tool that would send sensory information, physical, against their skin to help them balance, right?
Mm, yeah.
And once they started wearing the device, they were able to, like, ride a bicycle and do all kinds of things. And then what happened was something they didn't expect. People stopped needing the device.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that their brain had figured out a way to take similar sensory information.
And adapted. Yeah.
And was able to, you know, compensate for that physical loss in their body.
Yeah. That doesn't really surprise me, though, because if you look at history, through the bad things that human beings have been required to live through,
mm-hmm.
The ability to adapt to all circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, the Jews in Germany and stuff in Europe,
mm-hmm.
in the Second World War, it's a really good example because, I mean, we can't even fathom being hungry like that.
Or, mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I absolutely know what you're saying.
Under those circumstances, they were able to adapt to survive, mm-hmm. like the most unfathomable of circumstances and sicknesses and, you know,
something I've been trying to communicate. And something that, you know, I've seen that I've been trying to communicate is that comparatively across the world, the lifestyle that we live in the Western world, comparatively, like pretty U.S. and then like Canada and New Zealand and Australia and London and most of Europe, Western lifestyle, comparatively to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're rich, you know, and comparatively throughout history, the lifestyles of human beings, we are living high on the hog comparatively over history.
Right.
And when you look at the Bible and you look at the things that the Bible, you know, kind of requires of people, and you know, you have to realize that. A good example. This is a really good example because we were talking about this in Bible study recently. Slavery. Slavery was a real issue during the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
And neither Paul nor Jesus attempted to try to abolish slavery during their time because that wasn't their mission.
Right.
And all they could do was, or all they had decided to do, was, you know, focus on what really needed to be done, which was to preach the gospel, and then to explain to people, you know, if you're in this situation, this is how you're supposed to behave for the sake of the Lord.
Right.
Right.
As the slave and then as the owner.
Mm-hmm. Because this situation just existed, this disparity or whatever.
Yeah.
And so the Bible doesn't, you know, teach us to westernize people or whatever. And neither does, you know, our situation. We look at our situation and we just think that everybody lives like this, and they don't. A lot of the world, predominantly, like India, China, Russia, Eastern Europe, Africa, all live, and most of the people in those countries live, in countries and continents, live impoverished. Yes. Asia, all of those Asian countries and those those islands and stuff through there, they all live impoverished lives, the majority of the people. And the gospel's still good for them. The gospel's still relevant for them. But, you know, we can't really comprehend, you know, that lifestyle. We can't comprehend it.
I think that plays a lot into... like political grandstanding. I'm not
going to
point out a party, but I'm just saying, like, they think that, like for the women's rights issues, you know, they say there's a lot of people in government right now, and a lot of their supporters and the ones that have voted them in there, that think that women don't have enough rights. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's very unappreciative of what it means to be an American woman. Because when you look at our stance compared to women in other countries, mm-hmm. we are leaps and bounds, lifetimes ahead in our personal freedoms mm-hmm. than those people will probably ever be. I mean, they're having children. Their grandkids are probably never going to have mm-hmm. 15% of what American women have. And I think it's really sad, because if you really cared about women... You know what I mean? They would be fighting for the women over there,
mm-hmm.
trying to help real women who are really, really under rule and, like, you know, have no rights. But instead of that, they fight for these Western women that have everything. They have the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
They can drive. They have equal rights to men.
Yeah.
And the only thing is, like, the abortion thing, but that's now by state. But other than that, there is... Under my knowledge, there is nothing that women cannot do that men can do. And so I think it's really sad, because, like, real feminism would be when you look over in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And how women are killed for exposing a piece of their hair.
Yeah.
Accidentally, mind you. But that one who took off her hijab in protest, I think it was in Saudi Arabia. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know if you know that story. But anyways, she took off her hijab on purpose as... a protest, and obviously was brutally murdered.
Right.
And then civil unrest led after that. So instead of these women who are here, or Western cultures, mm-hmm. instead of them using their voices
mm-hmm.
to, like, bring real eyes onto these problems,
right.
like actual feminist issues,
yeah,
they spend it complaining about Orange Man, Mr. Bad Tweets.
So, yeah.
So, you know, bad tweets for president or whatever. Uh-huh. You know, that's their... And then it's like, you disservice yourself, because uh-huh. you don't really care about women's rights, because if you did, you would address these things.
Sure.
That's from a woman's perspective, really.
No, that's, so that's really from anybody's perspective.
Yeah, and I think that's really sad, because you have these people that say that they're pro-feminist, you know, pro-women.
Yeah.
But women who have no voice, who are void of any sort of impact that they'll ever have other than a protest of their own.
Yeah.
The women in the West, you know.
Yeah.
They ignore
this is
it.
This is an age old trick that's been played on humanity over and over again. And that is, you know, that you appeal to people's greed. You appeal to people's greed. That's what the Communist Revolution was about. You know, that there were these middle class Cossacks, landowners, that the communists convinced the serfdom, right? Convinced them that they were being mistreated and they should have more. And so you have a right
That's
to
so
go
true.
And kill these people, right? And so they say, yeah, we deserve to be equal, right? And they promise them this utopia. They promise a utopian society where everyone will be treated fairly and everyone will be treated right.
Right.
And, you know, each according to his ability, unto each according to their need. And, you know, all those lofty ideas totally negate or don't consider the human state. They don't consider the human state. People are innately evil. Okay.
Absolutely.
They are innately evil. This is the doctrine of sin in man. And so these people in our nation, it's easy to convince somebody you're being wronged, right? Cuz that's that triggers the victim mentality. Man, the victim mentality, I'm glad, thank you, Lord. The victim mentality goes all the way back to Cain. Think about this. Cain kills his brother out of envy.
Envy, yeah. Jealousy.
God comes along and says, I'm going to punish you. And what's the first thing Cain does? Oh, I'm a victim. Uh-huh. That's too much. I don't think
I
deserve
this.
How can I bear this punishment? Right. Yeah. And it's like, dude, you're not the victim here. Your brother Abel was the victim.
Yeah, he's dead.
Right, and now he's dead. And then later on, you read about, you know, one of his great-great-grandsons, was it Lamech? I don't remember his name. But he comes along and he says, I've killed a man to my hurt. Right, so some young man attacked him, and out of vengeance he killed him. Okay. And then he says, if Cain was you know, forgiven or whatever, I shall be forgiven sevenfold or something like that, right? I'm not using the exact same words.
Yeah.
But it's that same victim mentality that the real criminal isn't the one, you know, the real criminals are the ones who are like latching onto this, oh, I'm a victim. It goes into that whole thing about narcissism. And somebody was talking about narcissism in a video today.
Yeah.
And I watched it and I was like, thinking as the person was talking, I was like, you're a narcissist.
Yeah.
I mean, just the way you're talking and this authority that you think you have and this.
I've noticed that a lot. There's a culture of projection.
Yeah, it's a culture. Exactly. Thank you.
It's whatever you are. You know how they say, like, whatever you make fun of people over or, like, point on them, it's really what is in you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like bullies in school, if they call you ugly, it's because they feel ugly. You know what I mean? Or something like that. Project how they're really feeling. And if you notice culture nowadays, like especially Western culture, they project all of their insecurities on other people and then make you hate them. But it's like, dude, look at yourself.
Right.
Little introspection. Like,
think about this one, right? Think about all the people who are saying, we got to take the guns away. We got to make the world safe. We can't have these guns or whatever. And yet they're the same people who are going out with guns committing atrocities, right?
Yeah.
And if you look through, I mean, I'm sure you can find cases on both sides of the fence, but predominantly
in recent political,
they're coming from the, and so this is a projection from them, like, can't have guns because we can't be trusted with guns. And it's like, yeah, you can't be trusted with a gun, right? Because you're going to go out and do something, and it's the same goes for racism. Oh, you just don't like Obama because you're racist. The reason they're saying that is not because I'm racist. The reason they're saying it is because they're racist and they feel guilty about being a racist. And so every time somebody, you know, does something, they're thinking they're doing it based on their own, you know, position.
Yeah. And they won't condone. The only bad kind of racism there is white racism. You know, white people who are, according to them, but they're fine if a black person doesn't like a Hispanic person or Hispanic person doesn't like an Asian or, you know, however you want to toss that one up.
Right. Racism doesn't mean anything. Racism just means I don't like I don't like societal rules. I don't like laws. I don't like
They can hate civilization. White people. They can hate white people and command that they have no voice anymore and totally emasculate white men.
Yeah.
But you can't do it the other way. They're fine with that. And that's because projected race, they're
now,
okay with it.
Now, consider this, okay? First off, they say that they're against white people, right? They're not against white people.
No.
Because they'll accept a white person that adapts to the culture that they want.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
If a white person integrates with their culture, the whole, you know, rap culture. And now mind you, these
pop
cultural
culture,
things,
yeah.
These cultural things do not, they're not based on skin color, okay? It's just that certain societies, certain groups of people have adopted certain cultural behavior. And they're not against white people. They're against civilization. They're against law. They're for anarchy. They're for, you know, and so they're not fighting white people. They just use the white man as a straw man, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Their real problem is they don't want to conform to societal norms. They don't want they don't want to. That's why they change their language, right? That's why they have to have their own, you know, language, basically
their own
style
flag.
Of speaking, right? All of those things. It's just it's not an attack against white people. White man is just a straw man. He doesn't exist.
Yeah.
The people that they're angry with is the one who says, hey, stop talking like that, you know, and stop making songs about beating up women and abusing them and pimping them out and stuff, right? That's just disgusting. That's what they don't like, right? It's not the color of the sin, so to say. It is, it's a cultural thing. It's like, you know, we have a different culture, whoever we is.
Well, they project the term racist on other people when they, in turn, themselves are, in fact, practicing racism in its purest form.
Yeah.
You know, shutting down people because of the color of their skin. Well, it's okay.
Right.
If
assaulting
it's a white
people.
Person.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So.
But I don't think that they're real. Their real attack is not against white people. It's against society that's civilized.
Right.
Because listen to this. There are people. This was a video I saw yesterday. There's a man who's African, but he's from Africa, right?
Yeah.
And he comes over here. He makes friends with people. He's makes friends with people of all nationalities. He's sitting in a room on, what is it, Omegle? You know what that is?
Yeah,
where you can live chat with a total stranger anywhere in the world instantly. All these people are like just, you know,
talking.
Switching through people and talking to total strangers. So he gets online and he's got a white friend with him and he's got, I think, a Hispanic friend with him. And another man comes online who happens to be African, but he's African American. And the African American guy says, "Oh, you're a sellout. You're with a white guy or whatever."
Yeah.
And this guy just commences to chewing him out.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, "No, I'm not the problem. You're the problem.
Yeah.
Right? You're the loser. You're the one." And so, where am I going with this? There are people who come here from all nations, all walks of life, and they integrate into society. Right, they accept certain cultural norms.
Yeah,
I mean there are not anybody, but there's a lot of people who come here from other cultures, and they assimilate to certain cultural norms. Right, certain and they, even though they may retain their culture, like a lot of Chinese people, or a lot of Asian people come over here, they create their own communities, but they work with other people. They don't, they don't like confrontationally meet people. They just work with them and do business with them, and they live normal lives basically. Mm-hmm. And it just happens to be certain segments of our society are, you know, have been convinced that they need to, you know, buck the system because they're being
radicalized. Yeah.
Yeah. And to feel like you're targeted or whatever. It's like everybody's targeted to some degree in some sense or some fashion. Right.
Right.
I'm sure some people more than others, but even in those cases.
Well, it just goes back to the original thought that, Western people don't have it that bad. And
they have nothing else to complain about.
And they don't realize it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Even in the worst ghettos in America, whether you go to like the state of California, Illinois, New York, if you go to what would be considered their ghetto,
mm-hmm.
they're living far above what people in the poorest of nations are living.
Right.
I mean, they have running water.
Mm-hmm.
They have a toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a home.
Yeah, and no, so, you're great
you
points.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, it just goes back to that, the culture of just ungratefulness.
Yeah.
And I don't know really why that is the way it is, but like you said.
Well, they don't have any, they don't have a way to compare. They you know, people aren't going to go and compare themselves to people in third world countries because that's painful.
A lack of experience also.
Yeah.
A lack of...
context.
Context and not being taught, like, really how other people are living
mm-hmm.
and how blessed we are. And if you notice, if you go back when everyone was, like, so proud to be an American, you
mm-hmm.
know what I'm saying? When patriotism was, like, at a high.
Yeah.
Because we realized... all of the great minds were coming from our nation.
Yeah.
The great creators, the great engineers, the great scientists.
Yeah.
We were breaking all of those barriers.
Or we thought we were.
Right. The nucleus of the country was we're the best at everything.
Yeah.
And people really thought that, believed it, and were like, we're the forefront of history and freedom.
Yeah.
Like, you know... We fought for a cause, and here we are, and our people are free. And
that,
you know, that's amazing. But, like, kids now, they don't realize that. And, not really kids, just the younger people, I think, really. They don't really understand
anybody who can be convinced that they're being wronged.
Yeah.
You know, that's a mental Jedi mind trick that politicians use to control people.
Yeah, and that isn't to say that everybody had it easy or whatever. That's not the case. It's where we are now. And it's like we all have an opportunity to do something just by being born here.
You ever heard, again, I'm going to go back to YouTube. Can you tell I watched a lot of YouTube?
Yeah, me too. It's okay.
There's a guy on there called Bald and Bankrupt.
Okay.
You ever heard this guy?
I think I've seen some of his videos, yeah.
This guy goes anywhere in the world, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay, he's not like just going to Rio de Janeiro and Rome, Italy, and showing you all the nice stuff.
Yeah, right.
This guy goes to regions of the world.
The slums, yeah.
The slums, and so he was in Africa recently,
mm-hmm.
Rwanda, Uganda, and just abject poverty.
Right.
People sleeping in the streets, hand to mouth.
Yeah.
You know, you could see emaciated people. You could see people, you know, dying.
Hunger.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. People who weren't going to eat, you know. And, you know, true ghettos, true areas of just depressed, you know, fear of dying every day, crime, you know, crimes against humanity. People you know, taking advantage of other human beings. And like you said, where's the justice for them? You know, where's the outcry for them?
Right. And I think the telltale sign is, this is what I want to tell everyone who believes that America is just such like the worst place, right?
Right.
The one thing that I would say is then why does everyone
flood in here?
Come here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's really what I would like challenge them, because they know that if they can make it here, they have a chance.
Mm.
They have an economic opportunity that they could not have. Right. No matter what country you're talking about, they have an economic opportunity.
Yeah.
More so than freedom, they're coming here for an economic opportunity to rise out of poverty.
Yeah. Minimum wage for them.
Abject poverty.
Is awesome. Like, yeah, pay me minimum wage.
Yeah. I was talking to a sister a few days ago, and she had went to somewhere, I think it was India, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Anyways, you know how they have McDonald's all over the world?
Yeah.
So out of curiosity, she asked, well, how much are you making an hour? And so they told her in their currency, you know,
yep,
whatever it was. And she calculated it into American, the U.S. dollar. And it was like a penny a day.
A penny a day?
According to our money. And this guy is like working hard, you know, because fast food, that's hard work. They got to clean a lot and, you know, it's an honest job. And so this man is this teenager, you know, young man, he's working 8 hours a day for what would be considered a penny of our money. And if people understood that, you know how it's just the lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
The lack of knowledge of, even though they have the internet.
Yeah. Well, it's also purposeful ignorance also.
Right.
They don't want to know.
An unwillingness to learn. And also,
it's a lot better for them to.
Yeah.
Except that they're a victim, and please do not interrupt that narrative.
When the real message should be, we have an awesome opportunity. We are born in an awesome time in history. Right.
Thankfulness and gratefulness, you know, and gratefulness.
The attitude should be, or what the messaging should be from people who have made it, whatever you want to assign. You can talk political or just people who've made money and been successful, whatever. The messaging from them should be like, you are so privileged. We are born at the most awesome time in history.
Yeah, but
we are living
that,
above, you know.
Yeah, but see, that message has been communicated. And the response to that message was, we're tired of hearing it, right? We're tired of you telling us if we just work hard. And you know, I feel bad for this new generation. I feel bad for millennials, and I feel bad for Gen Z.
And Gen Alpha,
Whatever the generations are, right? Yeah. The new ones, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, they were told myths that were handed down to people like Gen X. Boomers told Gen Xers, you know, okay, if you work hard and you stay loyal and you save your money and you can get a house, you can get a nice, you can go on vacations, you can retire.
Yeah.
They're not going to get any of that.
No.
They're not going to get any of that. And the reason why is because there has been this inundation of victim mentality where there's an entitlement, where there's so many people who are dependent on the teat of government, and there's not enough, you know, creators anymore to, you know, create that wealth.
Right.
So they're not going to get homes. They're not going to get, but the price of a house is absurd right now. I mean, the median price of a decent house across the entire country has to be around $300,000.
I think it was $450,000 the last time I saw.
That's $500,000.
Right.
I mean, it's almost sounding like
the average
like,
median.
Yeah.
Median house price on the market.
So remember in Germany when they had to walk around with wheelbarrows full of money to buy stuff?
Right. Yeah.
That's where we're headed.
That's a whole nother problem because of inflation.
Yeah, I'm just using it. Yeah. I'm just using a hyperbolic example.
Yeah, well, one of those, I think it was the president of Venezuela. I might be wrong. Someone might want to Google this. But he did a speech in front of Congress, I believe. And he was talking, or maybe it was at the conservative, what's that thing where they, CPAC, the conservative whatever alliance committee.
Was it a think tank or something?
Well, it's where all the conservative Republican convention.
Okay.
But not the RNC.
Go ahead.
It's called CPAC.
All right.
Anyways, he did a speech and he was talking about he sees very similar things happening in our country that happened in their country before their money fell. mm-hmm. you know, whatever.
Yeah, the signs, the writings on the wall.
Right, right. And he was just talking about inflation and it's running away. And he was talking about the Fed Reserve, and then you just write checks. But the Fed Reserve backs the bank. And he said that's a circle of a lie, because you're writing checks for money that does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how much, how big the Federal Reserve is.
Right.
They don't have the resources to back the dollar.
Right.
Anyways, and he was just talking about how they used to pay, like, I don't know, something ridiculous, like thousands of dollars for a banana
mm-hmm.
of their currency, of course, not the U.S. dollar. And, yeah, scary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think about that and you look at what's going on. It's like the yeah. price of everything is outrageous. And then
right.
think about the future, and then you're thinking about your kids and then their right. kids, and you're like, oh. And then that's when I just go back Lose to God up. And I'm like, God, you're going to have to work everything out, because you were here before America. You'll be here after.
So, yeah.
You know, God will figure it out. But it is really scary. I mean, in terms of the economic future of people. And you're talking about, you know, retirement of millennials and Gen Z and Gen yeah. Alpha, Gen X. You think about that, and that's really scary, because mm-hmm. they're going to have, they can't save for retirement, first of all, because the cost of living is outrageous. It's just impossible.
Yeah. And they can barely afford rent.
Right. So you can't, it used to be where you could, like, set aside a portion of your income to savings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then you were saving that for retirement, but now that's uh-huh. like, come on, that's, people can't afford groceries and rent. And those yeah. are basic living right. needs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the value of the dollar, that is, it is pretty crazy. Runaway inflation. Yeah.
But scary. Pulling back to victim mentality, these concepts of justice, these concepts of injustice, concepts of people, you know, feeling they're wronged, and it's such a powerful tool to motivate people to do things.
You know what else is a really powerful tool? Fear-mongering.
Right, fear-mongering, right.
Getting people right. to be afraid.
Yeah.
And our government, both sides of the aisle, mm-hmm. or and whatever you want to call it, they all use that same tactic.
Yeah.
And that is not good, because it's very persuasive and it'll make people act desperately. And do right. things under normal circumstances that they would never do.
You know, that's an interesting concept, because being in a state of peace, yeah. right? And so, you know, like we kid around, I watch a lot of videos. And there's a lot of content on those videos from any side of the spectrum.
Yeah.
That incite anger. They incite anger. They incite a spirit of injustice. They incite, you know, like a vengeful attitude. And indignation, and, you know, I have to pray. I'm like, you know, I got to shut this off. Lord, yeah. I can't watch this stuff no more.
Yeah.
Because it's just making me mad. It's just making me angry. And again, going back to the projection thing, where the other people are getting it and they're just not able to control it, right? They don't have an outlet in God to be able to release and just be at peace.
To know that everything's going to be okay.
And this is the reason why a lot of these people, you know, that are following, like they go to these rallies for Trump or whatever, that the majority of those people, you know, are like, it's going to be okay, right? Even in dire situations, they still are able to, you know, control themselves. And, yeah. you know, and like, and so when they get into these conflicts with other people, and they're, you know, they're getting angry or whatever, that these people are capable of de-escalating. It's like, yeah. just, okay, let's just de-escalate, right?
Yeah.
Because these other people don't have de-escalation skills. They don't have de-escalation ability. They don't have the ability to walk back and be objective about what they're doing.
Yeah, because they, how do you say,
they feel like they're on some kind of righteous crusade.
Right. And that's the difference, because we're not fighting an ideology. We're fighting people's religion. Now listen to what I'm saying.
No, I believe like, that. Go ahead.
They have surrendered themselves to this thing, whatever you want to call it, but
yeah.
leftist ideology, whatever.
Yeah, that sure. Go
doesn't
ahead.
Matter. They've surrendered themselves, and that has become their entire personality. It has taken over every relationship. It is, it's gone into their jobs because they outwardly wear what they're feeling, like, you know, Palestinian flags on their lapels or whatever, whatever you want to say.
Sure.
I'm not saying it's wrong or it's right. I'm just stating a fact here.
Right.
But it's permeated their entire personality and existence and all of their friends and all of their people who just know of them, know how they feel. Mm-hmm. Okay, so like a soldier for the United States, a majority of the time they're fighting for a paycheck because they're getting paid, right? So if they're sent to war or whatever. Okay, but if you go to the Middle East, those jihadis, they are fighting people who are fighting a religious war.
Mm-hmm.
They believe what they believe in for right or wrong, and they're willing to die for it.
Yeah.
And to make other people think how they think. Mm-hmm. They are willing to put themselves on the line, and they do not care.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference.
Did you...
So, that was a weird... I'm just saying...
No, go ahead.
The what we're fighting, quote-unquote, I believe the war is between good and evil, obviously.
Yeah.
But we're not people... We're not fighting people... I'm talking politically and democratically. We're not fighting people... Yeah. On just the grounds of a policy, like a foreign policy stance or a domestic policy stance. That's not it.
Yeah.
They are completely sold out to.
Yeah, on the narrative, correct.
Anti-Christ, anti-Christian, anti what quote unquote America was. And so the people who think that this is just going to fall away because people are going to, like, you know, have their eye-opening moment, quote unquote. It's not going to happen because it's far beyond a political thing.
So did I send you a copy of that Mark Driscoll video where he talks about idolatry?
No.
Okay, you know who Mark Driscoll is.
Yeah.
Right, he's that pastor of that church.
Yeah.
Always wears casual clothes while he's preaching.
Right.
Whatever, dude. Put a tie on, man. Yeah. So whatever.
Disclaimer.
Right. If you're out there, Mark, I like you, I appreciate you, but we're not 100% with each other. But anywho, he was talking about idolatry, and he said when he was a kid, he went into somebody's house, family, that was not Christian, they were a different culture or whatever, and in their house, they had a little area that had a god on there, a little shrine, at a shrine, and they would put fruits there, money, and all this stuff.
Right, right.
He thought, he was like, oh, that's so absurd. Look at you. You got this idol in your house. And you worship that or whatever. He said, we don't have that. He said, oh, yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. He says, you've got a place in your house that you've got dedicated to your time and your effort and your energy.
Mm.
And he was talking primarily about the TV. But anything that dominantly controls your behavior and your mentality and your ideology, like the whole thing with quote-unquote science, right?
Yeah.
That you just believe it. You don't question it. You don't, you know, you just accept it. And real science is questionable. Real science is something that has to be questioned because, it has to be challenged. And you can't challenge any of the things that they're saying. If you challenge them, then you're automatically some fringe radical person. Right. And so this is it's a placebo replacement for Christ in their life. It's a way for them to feel like they're on some righteous
crusade
and that they have a mission and that they're standing on moral high ground and that this fills a void in their heart right with God.
Right.
Right. And so it's a placebo religion.
Yeah.
And it's very effective because people become dedicated to it.
Right. And that's the thing I was making the comparison about our soldiers and ones from the Middle East, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their entire life is operated around the religion. No matter where they are, they'll have prayer carpets. When the when the calls come on, they pray, whether they're in the store, you know, whatever, that it's permeated everything about their life.
Yeah.
How they eat, what they eat. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? No, this is not a weekend warrior religion. Correct. This is a, they're in it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so, in our political landscape on both sides, you have people and it's like, it's become everything to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, we're still people.
I like the fact that you're using these war conflicts. So consider this. Consider this. In the Revolutionary War, the people who fought against the British people were absolutely sold on the concept that they were fighting for. I mean, these men walked in snow barefoot to fight the British.
Right.
Okay? They literally... They didn't get paid. You know, they were told they would get paid, but they didn't get paid. They got these chits from the government, and they didn't get no real, you know, compensation, right? Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, one of the ongoing problems during the Revolutionary War was that these soldiers sold their chits for real money, but just at a very seriously discounted rate because they weren't getting any money and they needed money. And so somebody say, I'll pay you a quarter on the dollar for your chit, you know. Wow. And then they held onto the chits until the government actually was capable of start paying them.
Back,
right. And so those folks were, you know, sadly. But the point I'm trying to make is that they were dedicated to the cause more than to the compensation.
Right.
And then you go to the Civil War. The reason the North won was because ideologically people believed in the abolition of slavery, right? Yes. And so they were determined to win.
No matter what.
Was the same way on the other side. The other folks believed in whatever they believed in and were determined
for
to win.
For sure, right? Yeah.
Then you go to World War One, right? And there's a lot of different conflicts. World War One, World War Two is a better example. The ideology. We know that these people are evil. We know what they're doing is evil and we need to stop them in their tracks. And people were dedicated to the war. In Russia, it's not called World War II. It's called the Great War.
Yeah.
Right? And so ideologically, it was like, we have a mission to stop these people. Now, this is where it changes. Now we go to Korea. Right?
Yeah.
And it's like, we're still fighting this battle. Are we really supposed to be here fighting this battle for these people?
Right.
Right? And then it gets worse. You go to Vietnam. Right?
Yeah.
And now here we are fighting this war in Vietnam, and the people just don't seem to see or aren't given a real reason to be there.
Right.
Right? I mean, they were told we were fighting, we were staving off communism, and we were. But the American people in general were not sold, just weren't sold on the idea.
Right.
They weren't.
Which gave rise to all the protests.
Correct. And so then you used a great example of Afghanistan, Iraq, Afghanistan. Why are we here? What are we fighting?
Now, see, at the time, because of 9/11, most of the people that were over there had enlisted to go over there because of
vengeance.
Because
they believed in the concept.
They believed in the cause. But then years later,
it's like,
after...
why are we still here? What are we doing?
What was that guy's name? Colin Powell?
Oh, Colin Powell.
His report came out to be a lie about weapons of mass destruction. So you now have all those vets that went over there and killed kids, women, and also men, obviously. Now they have to live with what they did, knowing that it was for, quote unquote, nothing, not what they thought.
Right.
Which is detrimental to the psyche of those people. And it's really sad.
Mm-hmm.
I am about as patriotic as you can get. And I actively spend time watching documentaries about soldiers from different times, different war times.
Yeah.
And my heart just breaks for those people because now... not only are they stuck with being the victims of war mentally and also those who are hurt physically.
Right.
Not only do they have that, but then they have political wars that they must side on and they don't know what to decide. And they're really stuck and it's really sad. It's not talked about enough.
Yeah.
And it's a really horrible thing, honestly, honest to God. Like
psychological damage to war veterans is it's a lot deeper than a lot of people think. And and it becomes really horrible when the people who, you know, you're talking about people who have been sent out to kill people.
Right.
And some of these people have had experiences killing people. And then, you know, that alone, of being in war and killing somebody, it is psychologically damaging to a person.
Yes,
now
sir.
You add on top of it that everyone's questioning the original intent of why they were over there.
Yeah, because when they went, they were for it.
Yeah.
They believed that what they were doing was hindering that those nations from obtaining weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
WMDs, you remember.
People came back from World War II with a much better esteem about who they were and what they had done in Japan and Germany than they can from these other conflicts, because they're not as defined and they're not as, you know.
Not only that, but years later, post-conflict, you have all kinds of reports that have been
Monday morning quarterbacking.
You have proven to be flat-out lies.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat.
Right.
The information has come out and they're lies. And the psychological damage to those people, I mean, that's awful. Mm-hmm. Just
going back to the religious crusade the people we're talking about.
Yeah.
This fact that they've adopted these ideas as their religion, because they need, and so I guess the whole point kind of revolves around the fact that people need something to believe in.
Yeah.
And the devil will give them something to believe in,
yeah,
right? And they will behave religiously for it, just as dedicated as the Mujahideen, you know, the holy warriors of Islam, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever they're called, the holy warriors of Islam.
Yeah.
What is the word for it? It's jihad?
Jihad,
the holy war. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to tell people to get motivated about fighting for something, you're fighting for a holy war. That's what these people culturally, you had said it before, and it had really kind of stayed with me. You said, we have lost the cultural war in America.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on, is that these people have adopted a new culture that says America's bad and America did all these horrible things and we got to tear down everything that, you know, represents this society because somebody had slaves or whatever, you know. And it's like, yeah, I mean, those things happen, but those things happened all over the world,
mm-hmm.
right? And so not that it makes them any more right over here than it does anywhere else in the world.
No, of course. Yeah.
But still, there was a lot of good things that we had steadily inclined out of certain things over the years. And but, you know, it's if you could make somebody the enemy, if you can make somebody out to be the bad guy, the boogeyman or whatever, then it gives people motivation to fight. It's like this is a real cause to get behind. Because people don't, and going back to the whole thing about, you know, the prosperity in this nation, no one has anything really to fight for. You know, it's like human beings have to have a cause to feel like they're engaged in. And so this is the whole thing with the people in Hollywood. It's like they're actors. They've got a job. They do a job. They've been trained and have skills in pretending to be other people. That's what they do.
Yeah.
But they deep, and they get a lot of recognition for being actors, and they're seen and they're popular. And they come to this conclusion that they personally don't really stand for anything, right? All they are is an imitator, just that puts on and a director uses
puppet.
That a puppet. And a director uses that to create a story,
mm-hmm.
okay? And so they personally, they don't stand for anything, so they got to stand for something. Because they're, you know, they've got this popularity and this recognition, but deep down, you know, they're hollow. They're like, I'm just a, like you said, a puppet. That's a pretty hollow thing. And so they have to bandstand on some kind of idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so that whole arena is plagued with sin and plagued with wickedness and wicked ideas. So they get on that religion and they start promoting it.
Right.
And so, you know, and they've got quite an engine for promoting whatever ideology they want. You know, because, I mean, even I have one, a big giant black box sitting on top of my desk so that I can see, you know, in full color and have a story, you know, told to me in a very vivid and exciting way that these people, you know, can propagate their religion.
I think I was talking to my mom about this the other day and my dad and I just said what we're seeing now is just the physical manifestation of the spiritual state of the world.
Right.
And what we're experiencing, and I think people veer away a lot from religion and, you know, they replace it with, it's just, you know, it's these policies that crime is out of control. It's like, no.
Right.
Because no matter what politician, people are evil. And that's just what it is. But, we're just witnessing around us, whether it's in your community or in your state, or you want to go bigger in the nation and political arenas or whatever. Mm-hmm. We're just witnessing the physical manifestation of the war that is in the spiritual realm.
Right.
And good and evil are always fighting against one another.
Yeah. You don't have a cough and a runny nose. You have a cold. Right. Yeah. No, really.
Yeah.
And so you could treat a runny nose, you could treat a cough, but your real problem is you got a virus in your body.
Yeah, there is a virus. And if you ever go into any commentary on any political videos, there's people from all over the world. They're from Portugal, Spain, is down in South America. Mm-hmm. And they say in their best English, they type, vote Trump. He's the last standing for the West. Very broken English.
Yeah.
But the message that they're trying to convey is that the West is falling and he's the last.
Right.
What he represents, not necessarily him.
Right.
But the representation of what his government would look like and whatever, you know, strength in America, that's all. And so we're seeing, if you go over to Europe in the elections, that was crazy. But, you know, the West really is falling.
Yeah.
And, people from all over the world know that America sets the standard for the standards of other Western nations.
Right.
And as our morals decline, so does the rest of the world.
What was that
it's like
quote,
a slope. You know?
What was that quote or that idea that came from Reagan about, you know, if America falls?
I know what you're talking about, but I don't know.
Basically that he said that these people that were coming here said that This is the last bastion of hope in civilization.
In civilization, right.
And that if this falls, then there is no other place to go.
Yeah.
We're the one holding back the wave. And
so when you look at politics, right? Politics are they're just arguing between two people.
Yeah.
Okay. So now it was Trump and Biden, and now it's Trump and Kamala, I think, or whatever. But these people are not really themselves.
Trump and Obama's surrogate.
They're agents.
I'm not supposed to talk politics, sorry.
Well, I'm not really trying to talk politics. I mean, I guess we have the whole time, but it's not really pro one side or the other. It's just pointing out.
Ideology.
And you can't escape it in our culture right now.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to talk about the state of the world, you have to bring that stuff up because that's just what it is, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
To not address it would just be avoiding reality.
Right.
So no matter where you come down on the spectrum, the truth still is there.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, that makes people not like it, but whatever. I mean, it is what it is. But we're just seeing the manifestation of the spiritual realm.
Yeah.
And there's a fight for the heart of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to completely go against God and turn our back?
Mm-hmm.
And slide off into what they call progressivism, which brings, you already know, governments that are not pro-God, pro-Christian, you know?
Yeah.
Or are we going to hold on to those values?
Yeah.
And that's the decision. That's what's on the ballot. People don't understand that.
Right.
People think that they're just, I don't know, talking about just pick two arguments, like, you know, guns or whatever. But it's really not about that. You see what the people represent and what they want.
Right.
And there's a clear, clear line in the sand, an indication of what you're voting for.
Right. Yeah.
And that is pretty crazy. And it, like you said, it, the politics in the country, I really do have belief they've replaced where God is supposed to be in a majority of the followers.
Right. And this is the reason, and I'm going to wrap it up with this, but this is the reason why we have to pray. And and the thing is that there is a spirit out there that is aggressively trying to diminish the value of prayer in our society. You've seen the memes. You've seen the conversation. Oh, prayer is just empty, hollow words, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's the key indicator, the flag that the devil is waving, because we are making a difference. Our prayers are making a difference.
Yeah,
our prayers are keeping back the hand of the enemy. Our prayers are moving a man's head 1 centimeter to the left.
I was just going to say, if you can't see the miracles of God coming out in the quote-unquote political realm, you're blind.
Right. I'm just saying that prayer is making a difference. And when you hear people say it's empty, it's worthless, or whatever, no, we are in a spiritual warfare. And and the only way to fight a spiritual warfare
is in prayer.
So you get on these videos or whatever, and you get angry, and you feel like you want to fight, and you feel like you want to punch somebody in the face and knock their teeth out. You feel you want to get into one of those slap contests with them where you put the powder on your hand, and put the teeth protector in your face.
What is
and
that called?
Slap down or whatever. And you feel like you want to play that with them, and watch them just like stutter away. The real battle happens on our knees. The real victory happens in prayer. The real victory happens in submitting ourselves to the Lord. It says our weapons are not carnal, but they are mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. That our prayers really do make a difference. And so when I see people, they're constantly missing prayer meetings. They, they don't seem to take prayer seriously. And this is not me hating on anybody. This is me concerned. It's like that there's a serious, and the thing about prayer is that when you do it, you're not going to see it. Prayer is an invisible thing. You don't see the results. You can't. Mm-hmm. You can't expect God to just give you instant gratification for prayer. Even walking out the door, it's like, well, I don't feel any different. Don't worry, things have changed.
Yes. Yeah. You things always have constantly changed. Have to remind yourself.
The devil's always going to say, "Well, that was in vain. That didn't mean anything. That was just empty words." Keep doing it.
Keep praying.
Keep praying. Yeah. Keep praying. Anyways.
Right.
Just keep praying and keep seeking God's face. And the Bible says they that diligently seek the Lord are the ones that are going to be blessed. They're the ones that are God's going to do something for.
Yeah, and I feel for all these people that are the crusaders of said sides or whatever. And it's like, really, if you won your battle with Satan and became a Christian and surrendered yourself to God, you're changing the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As cliche as that sounds, but people want to take on these big movements and stuff. Mm-hmm. But if the battle is for the heart of the country, what's the heart of the country? The people. The people are mm-hmm. the heart of the country and what they want. And it's like, we need to get people back to God.
Amen.
Because when people get back to God, things get better. The closer they are to God, the more blessed they are. And that's just the truth.
Amen. God bless you. Thank you for coming. Bye.
Bye.